I'm Sean Healan. I'm going to be talking today about automatic heap layout manipulation for exploitation. And this is joint work with my supervisors, Tom Mellum and Daniel Croning. Okay, so I want to first of all talk about the manual process of developing an exploit for a heap-based buffer overflow. So if we start from a vulnerability report, this could be a bug you found yourself or a bug you found online. In this case, we're going to look at a vulnerability in PHP. And this particular vulnerability allows us to write a null byte directly after a heap allocated buffer. So what we want to do is we want to turn that into an exploit that allows us to execute native code. So what we need to do is we need to turn the null byte overwrite into say, an arbitrary read-write primitive so we can rewrite the memory of the program and gain code execution. So the first thing we do is we construct a minimized test case, which we have here. This is the code that triggers the bug. And the question is, well, what's going to get corrupted when we trigger this vulnerability? It's going to write a null byte immediately after the source buffer. And that could be an unmapped page. It could be allocator metadata, depending on the allocator. It could be user data. It could be a pointer. It could be some sensitive data. So what we need to do is we need to figure out how to get something that we actually want to corrupt after that buffer. So we can do this in a number of ways. One way is we simply go and we look at the source code if we have that available, and we look for a data structure that allocate or that looks like it will contain something interesting. So with PHP, you can look through it. Eventually, you'll find this GD image struct, which has an array of pixels as its first parameter. So when I first looked at this, my thought was, well, if we can rewrite this array of pixels pointer, maybe we can use the functions for changing the image to start rewriting arbitrary memory. So we need to figure out how do we actually allocate one of these data structures. So we look through the code, we find something that creates an image, then we find some way to trigger that from PHP, and eventually we end up with a minimized test case that looks like this. So we create an image, then we trigger the vulnerability, and we hope that the GD image structure actually gets corrupted. But of course, we've no guarantee that it will. So we could end up with this layout where the GD image struct is before the overflow source, and we're still corrupting something that we don't know what it is. So what we need to do is we need to put something in between the creation of the image structure and the triggering of the vulnerability that guarantees that we actually corrupt the thing that we want to corrupt. Right? Okay, so what we do is we start looking for heap manipulating functions. So we go through the source code again and we start looking for things that alloc data that the user can control. So here we see the string repeat function will allocate on the heap a string of a size that we can control, so we can use that to manipulate the heap. We look for other functions, so here we see down at the bottom a malloc of a static size, so we can use that to manipulate the heap, and we keep doing this until we have enough primitives available to allow us to manipulate the heap into the state that we want. Okay, so now our exploit looks something like this. We do some heap layout manipulation, we create the image structure, we do some more heap layout manipulation, we trigger the vulnerability, and we've guaranteed that the image structure is beside the buffer, so it gets corrupted. At that point, it's then up to us to finish the exploit. So completing the exploit in this case is using that vulnerability to rewrite the internal of the internals of the allocator to execute native code. Okay, so in this case, the steps to exploitation were as follows. We had to discover a vulnerability. We had to learn how to allocate some sensitive data on the heap. We had to learn how to interact with the allocator via the program's API. Again, remember, we can't just call malloc and free. We have to interact with the target's API, and then that will interact with malloc and free. We then achieve the required heap layout using these functions, and then finally we complete the exploit. So our contributions are in these stages here. We present a dynamic analysis based on the regression tests that come with PHP to discover how to allocate sensitive data on the heap. We then combine that same dynamic analysis with fuzzing to discover ways to interact with the allocator and manipulate the heap. We then present a search algorithm for discovering sequences that result in the correct heap layout. And one of the surprising things with this is actually that the search algorithm is incredibly simple. It turns out, as we'll see later, that a random search can actually achieve the layouts that we wanted, which was pleasantly surprising. And then finally, we present a template-based approach to exploit writing, which allows you to combine, say, the intuition and the creativity of a human exploit developer with the, I guess, search power of a machine to complete exploits together. Okay, so first of all, we're going to talk a little bit about allocator design. Allocator implementers have a lot of different design choices they can make depending on their requirements. So you might want to minimize fragmentation, maximize speed, maximize resilience, maximize security. And if we're performing heap layout manipulation, if we're doing it manually, we have to understand how all these allocators work, and it's quite a manual and tedious process. So one of the things that we would like to do is we would like our search algorithm for discovering heap layouts to be agnostic to the allocator. There are two design choices that are particularly important. I won't cover the others. One is an allocator designer can decide to use what are called segregated free lists. And in segregated free lists, these green chunks here are free chunks. And what they do is they keep a list of chunks for each size class. So here we can see we have two size classes. So we have a free list of size 128, a free list of size 32, and then the remainder. And what you can see is these free chunks can be anywhere in memory. Now, this is contrasted with what's called segregated storage or a bipop-based allocator, where when a request for an allocation is received, the allocator allocates, say, multiple pages and then subdivides those pages into chunks of exactly the same size. And then it will never split or coalesce those any further. And why this design is quite important when it comes to heap layout manipulation is you'll notice that only the start and the end chunks can actually be adjacent to chunks of a different size, right? So in the segregated free lists implementation, the chunks of different sizes could be interspersed with each other, whereas with segregated storage, only the start and the end chunks can be adjacent to something of different size. So that we would expect that to change the difficulty of the problem, and we'll see later when we do our analysis that it actually does. Okay, so I'm just going to give a brief introduction to heap layout manipulation. Say we have a source buffer of size 8, a destination buffer of size 32, and what we would like to do is we would like to put the destination buffer and the source buffer adjacent to each other so that the destination buffer is corrupted. So the first thing that we could try doing is simply allocating the source buffer and the destination buffer, but what we'll see is because the first free chunk of size 32 is before the first free chunk of size 8, then what ends up happening is the source and the destination end up in the wrong order. So if we trigger the overflow, we won't corrupt the correct thing. So the solution in this case is what's called hole filling. So what we do is we simply fill the hole of size 32 with a throwaway allocation. We fill the hole of size 8 with another throwaway allocation. That leaves the hole of size 196. So now when we allocate the source and the destination, they'll be put beside each other. The destination will get corrupted, and we progress with our exploit. One thing worth mentioning is that a significant challenge in heap layout manipulation is what we'll call noise. So noisy allocations are allocations that occur that we can't prevent. So for example, as I said, you can't interact directly with the allocator. You have to go over the program's API. And therefore, in some situations, it may not be possible to just allocate the thing you want. You may have to also trigger a bunch of other allocations. So in this case, we allocate when we want to allocate the destination, we also have to allocate this thing of size 32. And now that may get in the way. So we need to figure out some way to get these noisy allocations placed elsewhere on the heap. And the solution to that, so here we see if we just allocate the source and then the destination, this N0 allocation ends up in the way. So the solution is what's called hole creation. So what we do is we allocate three things of size 32, one of size 8. Then we free the middle chunk, which creates a hole of size 32. Now when we allocate the destination, the noise is captured by the hole here, and the destination is placed afterwards, after A3. So now if we free A3, we'll create a hole of size 8, and we can place the source in there. So that's what happens here. We end up with the source and destination beside each other again. So that's just to give you a quick introduction to what is involved in heap layout manipulation. It tends to involve hole filling and hole creation, and you're effectively trying to solve this layout puzzle. Okay, so if we want to automate heap layout manipulation, our objective is we want to place the source and the destination buffer adjacent to each other. The mechanisms we have available to us are hole filling and hole creation. And the complicating factors are, well, obviously, as I said, there's a diverse set of implementations for these allocators. We can't interact directly with the allocator. We have to go through the program's API. We have noise in these allocations. And then we have complicating factors from the allocator design itself, such as segregated storage. There are also a couple of other complications that we consider for this work to be out of scope. So those are non-deterministic allocators. So for example, the OpenBSD allocator uses non-determinism internally. The modern Windows 10 allocator uses non-determinism internally. But other allocators that don't are things like DLmalloc, the Linux system allocator, TCmalloc. And we also assume that we can force the heap state into a known starting state. So this occurs in situations, for example, when a new process is spawned for every connection and we have access to the binary. So if it's open source or it's closed source and we can get the binary, or if we can use another vulnerability to kill the server and reset it. Okay, so as I mentioned, one of the first ideas that we had was, well, what if we just try random search for this? Could it actually work? And the intuition for this is that there's actually quite a lot of equivalence in the solution space, because we don't care about absolute positioning of the heap allocated chunks, right? We don't care if the source and destination are allocated way over here or way over here, as long as they're allocated beside each other. So for these various reasons, we thought, well, let's just try random search and see what happens. So before we went on to doing this for real on a real target, we thought it might make sense to test it in a set of synthetic benchmarks, because obviously if it doesn't work on synthetic benchmarks, then completing it in a real target isn't going to make much sense. So we used tcmalloc, dlmalloc, avrlibc, and then we captured the starting states for Ruby, Python, and two ways of initializing PHP, took the cross product of these sizes, and then there are also some other parameters related to noise. It ends up with about 2,500 different benchmarks. We allow the random search to guess a maximum of 500,000 solutions, which takes about 15 minutes, and then ran all of the benchmarks. So these are the results averaged over all four starting states. So what we can see, first of all, is that when there's no segregated storage, so these two allocators don't use segregated storage, and when there's no noise, random search can solve effectively all of the heap layout benchmarks. Once we add segregated storage, so tcmalloc has segregated storage, we see a drop down to about 70% of the problem solved. With one noisy allocation, we can then see we're down solving about half of the problems. And then with four noisy allocations, the success rate drops again. So in summary, random search, it actually performs pretty well for what's inherently a very dumb algorithm, especially when there's no noise and there's no segregated storage. The other thing is, to get those results, we averaged across 9 runs of the set of experiments. And if we actually considered all 9 runs together, so a maximum of 4.5 million guesses, 78% of the problems were actually solved at least once. So that means that only 22% of the problems were never solved. And in normal exploit development, it's the case usually that you have a lot longer than 15 minutes of computation time to actually to get a result. So that was a pleasant surprise. And so we would say, with appropriate computational resources, random search is pretty effective. OK, so if you want to integrate this random search into the heap exploitation process we saw at the start, we need to solve a few different problems. The actual the target program we chose to experiment with is PHP. So PHP has an open bug tracker, and the language is pretty stable, and it's featureful but relatively easy to reason about. And our hypothetical threat model here is you can write a PHP program, and you can provide it to the interpreter, and you want to escape from the interpreter to execute native code. Okay, so our high-level algorithm is as follows. First of all, we need to discover how to interact with the allocator via the program's API. We do this in the following. So PHP comes with about 11,000 regression tests. From those regression tests, we can fragment them up into fragments of PHP, and then we can fuzz those individual fragments in an instrumented version of PHP to discover the resulting calls to malloc and free. So once we have these fragments that we know interact with the allocator, what we can do is we can start randomly combining them to manipulate the heap. So we start producing sequences that look like this. And in terms of a programmer writing PHP, this is obviously nonsense. But what's going on behind the scenes is the heap is being manipulated in a way that we know. Okay, so then we keep randomly generating those, and every time we generate a new PHP program, which tries to manipulate the heap, we check to see if the source and the destination are adjacent, and if they are, we're finished, and if they're not, we just repeat the process. So to evaluate this, we took 3 vulnerabilities in PHP and 10 data structures that are interesting to corrupt. So these data structures all have a pointer as their first field, so if you can corrupt them, you can use them for exploitation usually. A maximum runtime of 12 hours and 40 concurrent analysis processes. And in line with what we saw during the evaluation on the synthetic benchmarks, about 70% of the benchmarks are solved. On average, it takes about 10 minutes. And the maximum runtime for a solved benchmark was about an hour. So that was good to see. Okay, so a heap layout does not an exploit make, right? The fact that you managed to put two things beside each other in the heap is great, but in order to actually to complete an exploit, you need other things. So what we've decided to do is to provide the exploit developer with the ability to write their exploit as normal and allow them to leave holes in the exploit where a heap layout problem needs to be solved. And what this allows the exploit developer to do is to kind of skip over the tedious process of achieving that heap layout and write their exploit in a much more rapid fashion. So an exploit template looks like this. Again, we're exploiting the PHP interpreter, so the exploit itself is written in PHP. And the holes are these blue lines here. So we have a directive for our analysis engine called Shrike, which tells us at these locations, we want you to inject heap manipulating things. And then this final one here is we require the distance between this buffer and that buffer to be equal to this value. So this allows the exploit developer to just effectively ignore the fact that the heap layout problem needs to be solved and rapidly progress through the exploit. So the completed exploit looks something like this. We've injected the heap layout manipulation sequences and checked to see that the source and destination are adjacent to each other. OK, I'm going to show a demonstration now, which is our engine solving the original exploit problem. So the exploit developer is presented with a vulnerability. They write their exploit under the assumption that the GD image structure can be corrupted. And then our engine solves the problem, or the actual layout problem. So we'll see in the template, we have these X strike directives, which are just saying insert heap layout manipulation here. And then we have the rest of the exploit around it, which uses the corrupted memory to rewrite various things. So if we run this exploit normally, nothing will happen because we haven't actually achieved the layout yet. So we'll see here, we're just corrupting some nonsense on the heap, and nothing happens. I should point out what we're hoping for when we run this exploit is it's going to pop up a calculator at the end, the universal sign of something's been exploited. So we run the solver, and what the solver is doing is it's generating a PHP program after PHP program, taking that template, substituting in random chunks of PHP that it knows will manipulate the heap until it actually constructs a functional exploit. Now, what we can see here, as the search progresses, the distance between those two chunks is getting smaller and smaller. And one of the nice things about this is it allows you to experiment with many different strategies for exploitation in a shorter period of time. So what we see here is we finally achieved the layout. So if we open the template, what we'll see is all of this stuff that, again, looks like nonsense but is manipulating the heap in the background has been injected into the template. And when we run it, we will hopefully see a calculator popping up. So the exploit is completed, and we're done. OK, so a few takeaways from this. The first is that we can automate heap layout manipulation end-to-end, so discovery of API sequences, discovery of interesting things to corrupt, and then doing the actual manipulation itself. There is plenty of future work in this area, so different types of software, improved discovery of the interaction sequences, and obviously other types of heap-based vulnerabilities. I think the talk after this is actually about a different class of vulnerabilities. Random search is an effective mechanism for automatic heap layout manipulation. It's solving somewhere between 70 to 75% of most of the test cases that we came across. However, there's again plenty of scope here for improved search. We actually have a paper coming up which is a vastly improved search. Also, relaxing the constraints on non-determinism in a starting state so we can work with different allocators and different classes of programs. One of the more interesting things, I think, from this is that the exploit templates are kind of a new approach to adding automation to exploitation, where we can kind of take the creativity, intuition of a human exploit developer and combine that with a search algorithm to get the best of both worlds. And then Shrike itself is a proof of concept system of all of these ideas. It's open source, and you can find it on GitHub. Okay, thank you very much, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take them. Like I said, you can find the code and paper here. Thank you.
Hi, Dongyun Lee, Virginia Tech. Interesting talk. I have a question about the false positive in your exploit. If the user is using the bebop style, like a locator, where and if you're assuming that the source buffer and the destination buffer has a different size, then the chances that they're going to, well, I think it's not possible that they will be actually located adjacent to each other. So when you are generating these exploits or the layout, do you consider what are the actually feasible, let's say, layouts
So depending on the allocator, they actually can end up beside each other.
Yeah.
So the very last element of the run of pages can end up beside the first element of the next run of pages. So in this exploit, actually exactly that is happening. The source buffer is 384 bytes or something, and the destination buffer is 7,360, and eventually it finds a way to put the two of them beside each other. So it's okay. The end of one page is right beside the start of the next page. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Wei. I'm from University of Chinese Academy of Sciences, and I remember you're using regression test cases to find the corruption target object.
Yep.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if you would like to share your opinion about what can we do if the regression test is not available or not complete? Do you have any suggestions?
Good question. So I think at that point, deploying like a fuzzer or symbolic execution engine, something like that was in the previous talks, to then generate, because what we want is we want paths through the program that allocate interesting things. And anything that can generate paths through the program will help, right? It just so happens that regression tests are a really convenient way of getting all of that information to begin with.
Okay. Very great work. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thanks very much.
Thank you.